B-Pod Studios.
Casper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk soft and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Casper!
Hey, Murray.
Casper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Casper!
Hey, Murray.
Casper!
Hey, Murray.
Casper! From the Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester, this is Casper and Murray. It is a Murray-less Casper and Murray. My name is Matt McCarthy, in for Big Jim today. Chris Casper is alongside, at least for part of it. We've got Sean Silver on Sports of Headlines, Brian Robb taking your calls, running the board, 617-779-0985. I think this is a maiden voyage of McCarthy and Casper. I think there was one time, Chris, where I came out of the bullpen and we did maybe like a 7-minute segment at the end of a show once. But I think this is a maiden voyage. I'm happy to be on with you.
No, it's great to be on with you too, Matt. And I feel like there was one time maybe where maybe somebody wasn't ready to go at the beginning or something had happened, and I feel like maybe you filled in at the beginning of the show for a couple of minutes.
I think somebody might have been late or something happened.
Yeah.
Right. So,
but yeah. I know I was there, which is the surprising thing. It wasn't me, and we needed someone to sit in the a-hole chair, and
yes,
you did an admirable job.
Somebody for Murray and Casper that you pretty much just put the pin on Big Jim right there.
Well, the question was...
He was the one who was late.
Was
all right,
it, was
you,
it a Bertrand
say it,
and
don't
Gasper?
Be afraid.
I mean, because, you know...
It might have been a Bertrand and Gasper, I feel like.
I've been around long enough that, you know, Bertrand and Gasper was still a show. So there may have been a time where I filled in.
I feel like there was... I feel like that happened.
So the point being is we've been on many shows together.
Correct.
But not in this iteration. We've done probably about 10 minutes total over the course of my near 7.5 minutes at the station. So we'll see over the course of these next 2 hours if you want to do it again. And we're going to place bets on that right now.
Okay.
I'm leaning towards no. I'm leaning towards you will talk to the powers that be and say never again. But hey, we'll see.
That did happen with one person, I will say. No names, but that did happen once.
I think we can potentially all figure that out. I may or may not have been listening to that show that day, and I said, this poor person, Chris Casper, this poor, poor person. So, you know, given that I am in the Big Jim Murray seat,
yes,
I feel that it is only appropriate that I open up the show by bitching about my life.
Yes, do it.
So, you two, I hope you came in good shape today, because you are going to be carrying my ass for the next 3.5 hours. Chris, only for two, because you need to get to Philadelphia.
I have to get to Philadelphia.
So,
yes.
Sean Silver, get ready, and Chris Casper, get ready, because you are going to be carrying me for the next 3.5 hours. I was here until 2 a.m. last night for that worthless Celtics game where they barely edged out the worst team in the NBA in the Golden State Warriors.
It's a great game.
And there were a million different replays. It was an entertaining game at times. It was entertaining unless you're sitting there at 2 a.m. saying, no, it's all good. I only have to host a show tomorrow. That's fine. So, yeah, you guys are definitely going to be carrying me for the next 3 hours. So, really, wherever you want to go, we will go. 617-779-0985. Some programs would call it agenda-free. We need to come up with our own moniker. But, hey, you want to take the show in a direction today? You certainly can do that. Why don't we open with the NFL? And we've got the Celtics show coming up at noon.
Yeah.
I want to get into some thoughts on the Red Sox and the Astros and this whole scandal in baseball. I think there are some fascinating ties between the Red Sox and the Astros and Alex Cora. I mean, this is a juicy story. So I want to get into that later on. But, Chris, why don't we start with your thoughts on the whole Myles Garrett thing the other night. I'm sitting there in a bar in Worcester, and I'm half watching the game because, I mean, it's over. And all of a sudden, you know, the place just starts going wild, and you see the replay. You're like, holy crap, did that just happen? It was riveting. You couldn't take your eyes away from it. You know, I know Jim does not think it's bad. I generally think that taking a person's helmet and then trying to club him over the head with it is a bad situation. What did you make of the whole thing? What did you make of the NFL's reaction to it in this whole saga?
I mean, that just simply can't happen. And look, I'm not saying that Mason Rudolph is innocent here.
No.
I'm not saying he's blameless. He obviously participated in the scuffle, but there are scuffles in the NFL every week. We see that all the time. Mm. Pushing and shoving and chirping. And, you know, and for all the Mason Rudolph defenders, just know that your guy, Julian Edelman, he chirps almost more than anybody in the NFL.
Sure.
So how would you feel if he was chirping or if he grabbed somebody's junk, which happens in pretty much every pile, every fumble? What do you think's happening at the bottom of that pile? So there is no rationale that excuses or justifies Myles Garrett's reaction in terms of the helmet. You want to rip Mason Rudolph's helmet off and you want to throw it down the other end of the field? I got no problem with that. You want to rip the helmet off and then sort of roll it at him or flip it at him and say, here, you know, you don't need this, son. You suck with the four picks. Got no issue with that. But trying to end him with his own helmet, you can't do that. That just can't happen. I'm sorry. And he lost his mind. And now I think he should lose his uniform. And I said yesterday on Felger and Mez, I think it has to be at least 10 regular season games. They've suspended him indefinitely. So we know that's six games here. He's suspended for the postseason if the Browns make it.
Which they won't.
Yeah, again, I have to laugh at that. I mean, what a terrible team. Don't get me started on the Browns and Baker Mayfield. So that's fine. But for me, he should miss the first four games of next year. And that's what happens with some of these personal conduct suspensions. You see it's a four-game suspension. The guy misses the first four games of a season. Or if you're violating the substance abuse policy, you know, some guy that's smoking marijuana. For me, if you're trying to end an opponent, and that's what he – I mean, he was trying to end Mason Rudolph. If he had really connected with the right end of the helmet, I mean, he could have done some real damage. For me, the message has to be sent. Myles Garrett has to be made an example of, not for Myles Garrett, but for everybody else in the league, so that any guy that in a flash of anger, even just that notion of doing that comes across their mind, they're like, ooh, can't do that. And I think that's where the NFL has to send the message here, where this punishment should not be over when the 2020 season commences.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with that, and you make good points. I mean, he used the helmet as a weapon. And, you know, this crosses the line between a football scuffle. And listen, it's a physical game, and things happen, and guys cross the line. And as you mentioned, you know, like, you know, things happen on the field that, okay, you know, should they happen? No. But, you know, it's sort of a part of the game. That's not a part of football. And, you know, as the NFL said in their statement, and it's totally true, he used the helmet as a weapon. He took it off his head and used it as a weapon. And that crosses so many lines that it is inexcusable. And of course, he should be suspended for the rest of this year and for parts of next year as well. When I watched it in the moment, Chris, and you know, maybe this is just me, you know, being a terrible person and not realizing, you know, kind of what I had just seen. My first thought was, this is going to be the defining play of this guy's career. And he's a great young player. He's a great young player. But when you say the name Myles Garrett, forever now. I mean, 10, 15, 20 years, even if he goes on to have a Hall of Fame career, what's the first thing you're going to think of?
He swung Mason Rudolph's helmet at Mason Rudolph.
Right, exactly. You know, and Albert Haynesworth was a great player for time, but, you know, what do you think of with Albert Haynesworth?
Stomping Andre Giroux.
Right. A defining moment for this player in his second year in the league. And it just goes to show that, you know, when you truly lose your mind and when we truly just have those moments of pure stupidity in life, those don't go away. They don't. That stays with him forever, Chris.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that this is something that obviously he's going to have to live with. And I think he said all the right things, and I do appreciate that.
Sure.
But again, there still has to be a punitive measure taken here that acts as a deterrent moving forward for other guys that would even think about doing this, because it just sort of completely devolves into dangerous chaos if guys feel like, oh, I can swing a helmet at somebody and, yeah, it'll be like 5-6 games. I mean, if that were the case and there were someone I really didn't like, I'll be honest with you, 5-6 games, yeah, I'll clock him with the helmet.
Not strong enough.
You just can't have that. And the other thing I'd say with Myles Garrett that for me is a factor, McCarthy, is look at his behavior this year. It's nothing. He had done nothing even close to this, but he had drawn a lot of penalties. He'd been penalized 8 times. He had 2 unnecessary roughness. He hurt Trevor Siemian, the backup quarterback for the Jets, with the late hit. He threw an open-handed punch after the whistle at Delanie Walker. He's kind of been, you know, borderline dirty all year long, and he crossed the line in this play. So I think you have to send a message to him as well that, hey, man, you got to clean it up a little bit. Like, yeah, we know the helmet thing doesn't happen every week, but you're on the line and you're on the edge in every game you play, and you got to rein it in. Like, we, you know, we like guys that are competitive, guys that are tough, guys that are intimidating. We want all that stuff. But you can't be engaging in behavior that endangers your fellow players, you know, every single week. And that's where it's also incumbent upon the players, and where I like what some of his Browns teammates said. Because it's not just about the NFL to police this and clean this up. It's the players, too.
Sure.
Like, no matter what the league does for player safety, and I think a lot of that sort of window dressing, and it's basically based upon we want to keep our business in business. The reality is it's up to the players on the field. And if the players are going to tolerate the Vontaze Burfict and the Myles Garretts and guys that do dirty stuff, and they're going to tolerate that, then the game's not going to be safe, and it's going to be their own fault.
This stays with him forever. 617-779-0985. Frank the Tank You're up next with Matt McCarthy and Chris Casper. What's up, Frank?
Not too much, guys. Look, I understand that the world that we live in now, people are a lot weaker, stupider.
This is true.
You know, just parasites. I really feel that a lot of the human, we're just parasites. We're just idiots. You know, the outrage that started to happen, you know, I'm completely with Murray, what he said yesterday. You know, people need to get a grip. Was it an awful thing that happened during the sporting event? Of course it is. And, you know, and this is a guy, you know, you guys are talking to a guy. I love violence. I want to see more violence. But these people that cry the outrage, they've already ruined my favorite sport of hockey with taking out the fighting and everything. I mean, really, though, to ruin this guy's life. Now, and Chris, I agree with you. It should be a 10-beller. This kid should definitely be suspended a minimum of 10 games, in my opinion. But, I mean, come on. The outrage that's coming on with these, even the former players or whatever, give me a break. It was a small moment in time. It's not like the guy pulled out a .357 and tried to shoot him. Let's get a grip, people.
All right, thanks for the call, Frank. Yes, here's where I disagree.
Okay.
All right, you know, so, well, you've ruined hockey because you've taken the violence out of the game. You know, it's one of those, you're ruining my favorite sport, or you're ruining sports with moments like that. I'm sorry, there's no place for this in football. If guys aren't out there swinging helmets around and trying to hurt other people, does that take away from the game itself?
No.
That's where you cross the line.
Yeah, I have a bigger issue with, like, oh, Jonathan Jones clock Josh Allen. That has to be a penalty.
Right.
That has to be
sure.
Like a fine. To me, that's stupid.
100%.
Like, that's just football. That's where you're ruining football.
Absolutely.
But, you know, they talk so much, Matt, about defenseless this and defenseless that. Like, you know that on an interception, if Tom Brady throws an interception, this makes no sense. If Tom Brady throws an interception and he's running around trying to make a tackle, do you know that if you block him or touch him, he's considered a defenseless player?
That's ridiculous.
Even though he's trying to, because they want to protect the quarterbacks,
right?
Because guys were trying to blow him up after the play. You know, stuff like that, I'm kind of like, all right, well, the quarterback should just sit there and not make the tackle then. To me, the moment he tries to make a tackle, he's like everybody else on the field. But my point is, the league is so honed in on defenseless. Is there anybody more defenseless on a football field than a guy that doesn't have a helmet
100%.
When everybody else does?
100%. No, you're totally right about that. This has nothing to do with football itself. This isn't changing the game, the course of action. To your point, defenseless receivers, you know, that's where sports have gone too far. Moments like this, I'm sorry, that crosses the line. 617-779-0985, leading off with our Myles Garrett thoughts today. We're also going to get into the Patriots and the Eagles this game this weekend as well. Red Sox, Astros, and the Celtics show coming up at noon today. It's Matt McCarthy in for Big Jim Murray on Gasper and Murray here on 98.5.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I didn't see why it started, but it's inexcusable. I don't care, rivalry or not, we can't do that. That's kind of the history of, you know, what's been going on here lately, hurting yourself, and that's just endangering the other team. That's inexcusable. He knows that. I hope he does now. It's tough. We'll see.
Mason Rudolph, a friend of yours, Myles Garrett, a teammate of yours. What were you saying to your teammates over there to kind of calm everybody down?
I don't think there's anything in that moment that I can really say to calm him down. You know what? The reality is he's going to get suspended. We don't know how long, and that hurts our team. And we can't do that. We can't continue to hurt this team. It's inexcusable.
That's a documented tool bag, Baker Mayfield. However, I thought he was...
Oh, I love you, I could kiss you on the mouth right now.
I thought he was phenomenal. Bigger. The other night,
in his
response, that's some real honesty from Baker right there. And I mean, he's calling out his teammate. I would say in a pretty respectful way, you know,
sure,
saying we can't do this.
Yeah.
But I was surprised by that. You know, given Baker's history, I thought that was some real maturity and real leadership from Baker Mayfield. Again, documented tool bag. And maybe you're not ready to come over on that one there, Chris.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm not a fan, but I thought that was a good moment from Baker
so,
the other night.
Look, I like what he said, and I will give him credit for that. But here's my question. Knowing what you know about Baker Mayfield and the behavior that you've seen and his own inability to accept accountability for things that have happened this year with the Browns, do you think that reaction, would he have reacted the same way if, A, they had lost the game? Or B, if the guy who had been clubbed with the helmet was not his friend, Mason Rudolph?
617-779-0985. I'm not going to respond to
okay.
that. I'm just
I have my doubts.
No, it's a fair question. It is. But you know what? I'm not going to kill the guy for something that didn't happen. Isn't that one of the Felger and Maz commandments? You know, don't blame somebody
for
something.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to that, especially when it's Baker Mayfield.
Certainly not. No, there's a real bias in there, and I'm generally on your side. But I thought that was a good moment from Baker Mayfield the other
day. I mean, he said the right thing, but I just think it's easier. I think it's easier to respond that way when you've won the game. Mm-hmm. It's easier to respond that way when it's someone that you know personally and care about. And I'd also say that, look, I'm not blaming Baker Mayfield for what happened. It's not Myles Garrett's responsible for what his actions. But wasn't Baker Mayfield the guy who campaigned for Freddie Kitchens to be the coach?
Yes.
And so when he talks about, you know, we've been hurting ourselves and that's the history. And, well, dude, basically you went to the owner and campaigned for a completely unqualified guy that kissed your ass to be the coach of the team. You put your comfort ahead of what was best for the Cleveland Browns. So, I mean, talk about people doing things that hurt the team. So that's why I just have a hard time giving, like, to me, the whole chaotic mess that is the Cleveland Browns, Baker Mayfield has to take a big part of the ownership of that for being the person who went to bat for Freddie Kitchens, who's completely unqualified to be the head coach of that team.
I could not agree more. I mean, I couldn't agree more. Again, documented tool bag, Baker
like
Mayfield.
That.
But even documented tool bags have some decent moments.
They have some redeeming moments. I get you.
Okay. Even if it's just one redeeming moment.
You won me over, McCoy.
I'll give you that. But again, documented tool bag. You and I are very much in agreement when it comes to Baker Mayfield. It's Matt McCarthy filling in for Big Jim Murray today. He's in Philadelphia. Chris is going to be in Philadelphia later on today. I'm going to be in Philadelphia tonight. It's going to be one hell of a party. Patriots-Eagles. We'll get into that in a second. Got Sean Silver alongside. And Kevin is in Manchester. What's going on?
Yeah, the whole thing with the Thursday night game. You know, the 10-game suspension, I mean, I don't really have a problem with that. I think, you know, people coming out and talking about tossing them out of the league is just, you know, way too extreme. I think that's utterly ridiculous. But there was a point, I think it was Toucher and Rich, it was like on the morning show, like one of the points they brought up was, you know, it's not necessarily the result so much as the intent. You know, one of the points I brought up was, you know, you look at that hit, and if that helmet's flipped around the other way, and he's coming down with the top of that helmet, the crown of that helmet, into that guy's skull. I mean, you're looking at possibly having some guy laying on the field with his head cracked open. And to me, that's where I think it's more about, you know, the intent than the actual result. So anyway, that was just my thoughts on it. So
no, and Chris, that's the point that you've made. I mean, if he landed that helmet squarely, you're talking about a really serious situation. He used the helmet as a weapon. He used it as a weapon. This is not a football scrum. This is not something you normally see in the game. He took an item and he used it as a weapon. That is totally unacceptable. 100% unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I just think it's just so dangerous that it's something that the league just can't allow to happen. It's one thing if a guy's wearing a helmet and goes to make a tackle and hits another guy helmet to helmet, you know, with the crown of his helmet. It's like that's accidental. That's in the flow of the game. But we are talking about a guy who's 6'4", 271 pounds, wildly swinging a helmet at a guy that doesn't have a helmet on at his head. I mean, that's really dangerous. So you just can't have that happen. You can't.
Howard's in Randolph. Hey, Howard.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I have an interesting question. It was the last play of the game. They're down by 2 touchdowns. Why, instead of trying to throw a pass and getting sacked, didn't he just take the knee and end the game?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I guess if you're Mason Rudolph, right, you're getting to play because Ben Roethlisberger is out. You've had a rough night. There's probably some frustration on your end. You know, you play, what does Bill Belichick say? 60
play
minutes.
Play 60 minutes.
Play to the whistle. So, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, you can, for me on that one, that's more like on the coaching staff of the Steelers. It's like our guy's had a horrible night. He's been under pressure all night. He's taken a beating. He's played poorly. Let's just get him out of here and move on. We'll take a knee. So I would put that more in the coaching staff than the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you see that a lot, though. I mean, in a team down 2-3 scores, they're still throwing. I mean, because I think there is an attitude, well, we can correct some things. We can work on some things. You can't replicate game reps even in practice. So, you know, screw it. Just go out there and air it out. And, I mean, listen, did the situation call for it? No. But, I mean, is this really the thing we're going to focus on from this incident?
No. But, you know, he had the question.
Sure.
I understand what he's saying, because it's like if they do just take – I mean, it's kind of – I'm not blaming anybody for Pittsburgh for what happened in terms of not taking a knee. But it's kind of like when Shiano was coaching the Buccaneers, right? And people would take a knee, and he was teaching people to, like, dive in there. It's like, don't be stupid. Like, at a certain point, the game is over. And from the Pittsburgh side, I don't have a problem with what they did. But I think you can make a case to say your young quarterback's had a terrible night, 4 sacks, 4 picks. Just have him take a knee. He's taken a ton of hits all night. Just get him out of there. Get him out of harm's way.
617-779-0985. Patriots and Eagles this weekend. A rematch of Super Bowl 52. Chris Gasper had the audacity to bring that up here today as we walked in the studio and said, I really think the story of this game is about the rematch. So thanks for bringing me down. Thanks for making me feel bad, Chris. Again, I was here till 2 in the morning last night. I really didn't need you to come in and bring me down like this. But I guess we'll go down that rabbit hole on the other side. We can talk about this game and what it means for the Patriots coming off the bye, bouncing back from that Baltimore game. Was the defense exposed 2 weeks ago? Can the Eagles expose them in this game? I think this is an interesting one, not only from the rematch angle, but also from the on-the-field 2019 angle as well. 617-779-0985. It's Matt McCarthy and Chris Gasper here, Sean Silver with the headlines.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Dorsett, wide side left. After Brady, Tom takes the snap. He's pressured. He moves up. He slips the rush. He steps to his right. He loads up. He throws deep downfield. Rock is there at the goal line. Ball is up in the air. Batted around. And it's incomplete. And the Philadelphia Eagles, for the first time in their history, are Super Bowl champions. For the first time in 58 years, are atop the NFL. It's their first title since 1960.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard that call. It's been 2 years, but I don't think I've ever heard that call. And you know why? Because I've avoided everything about that Super Bowl like the plague. I haven't rewatched it. I don't think I've ever looked at the stats or, you know, or anything like that. Once that game was over, I was so mad. I think I blocked everything out. And I don't think I've heard that call. I don't think I listened to the station. I don't think I did anything. So I don't think I've heard that call. And it's Matt McCarthy and Chris Gasper here on Gasper and Murray. No big Jim Murray. He's in Philadelphia getting ready for this rematch tomorrow between the Patriots and the Eagles. A rematch of Super Bowl 52. 617-779-0985. You said something to me off the air, Chris. You said that was the worst Super Bowl loss the Patriots have had.
Yeah.
As part of this era.
Yes.
I would still put 2007 ahead of it. And I know you love the 2007 Patriots. And I know you might even be the owner of the 16-0 banner that disappeared.
Oh, I can only dream. I hope so.
If somebody knows where that is, Chris Gasper would love to put it in
that
his
That is correct.
Room.
I would.
So please let us know.
It's a notable accomplishment.
We're not going to rehash that. But okay, we will rehash Super Bowl 52. You think that's the worst loss the Patriots have had in the Super Bowl?
I do. I think Super Bowl 42 is the most painful.
Yes.
But from a purely football perspective, if you take the emotion out of it, if you take the idea of what could have been with the 07 team and 19-0, and you take that out of it and just look at it from a football standpoint and a performance standpoint, I think 52 trumps it. I do. I mean, you look at Super Bowl 42, you'd already played that Giants team. They'd given you a game that went down to the nitty-gritty in the fourth quarter. And even losing that Super Bowl, they gave you another game, but they don't beat you unless there's like a crazy fluke play, which is the Tyree play. There's nothing you can really do about that. It's like terrible. It's terrible luck, right? So it's a super fluky play, and it's a team that had played you before and played you pretty well. You lost. It stinks. It's terrible. You had history that ended up being forfeited. But 52, this game, Doug Peterson, a backup quarterback, they slapped 41 points on you. Johnson Bademosi, Jordan Richards, Eric Lee, Marquise Flowers, Alandon Roberts running around like chickens with their heads cut off. You show no defense. The best unit on your defense at that point, the safety unit, Chung, Harmon, McCourty, they all have bad games. You botch a trick play. They score on a trick play. You miss a field goal on a bad snap. You miss an extra point. I mean, you basically do all these things to lose the game. You still have the lead in the fourth quarter. You need one stop, can't get it. You waste Tom Brady's Super Bowl record passing performance of 505 yards. You waste a Super Bowl record 613 yards of offense. You lose a game in which you never punted. You allow the Eagles to score on 8 of their 10 drives, including the final 5.
Right.
They punt just once in the game with Nick Foles at the controls. I'm sorry. To me, that's worse. That just from a purely disappointment standpoint, that was worse. Oh, and I didn't even mention the fact that you never tried Malcolm Butler on defense.
Here's the thing. That we're going to look back on that loss, and we're going to look back on that Super Bowl, particularly with the way the Eagles are trending. And I think we're going to look at that as one of the greatest fluke Super Bowls of all time. Like, how did the Eagles ultimately win that game? Here's why I think
they didn't. The Patriots lost it, and that's right. Why it's the most disappointing.
Right. Here's why I don't think it's as painful as it was even just a year, year and a half ago. Because they went back and they redeemed themselves last year. You know, the reason why that sucked so much in the moment is they left one on the table. They totally left one on the table, but you felt like, man, they might never get back here. Look at the way that this defense is trending. I mean, think about the names that you just mentioned. Guys who played legitimate roles on that defense who are obviously no longer here for good reasons. You see that defense and you feel like they're trending in the wrong direction. Tom Brady's only getting 1 year older. You felt like, man, they might never get back here. And there were moments last year, you know, after the loss to Tennessee or after the loss to Pittsburgh, where if you seriously questioned if the Patriots were going to get back to that moment and, you know, get back to the Super Bowl, I think it would have been fair. I mean, I know I did, and I think a lot of people did. And so you left that Eagles game being like, this might have been their last crack at it, and they blew it, and they totally blew it. But they redeemed themselves last year. And not only, you know, did they go back and win the Super Bowl in a year where a lot of people thought they couldn't, it was the way they won the Super Bowl. They won it on defense. And they ripped that defense and Bill Belichick and, you know, the decision to bench Malcolm Butler, they ripped a Lombardi trophy out of Tom Brady's hands, which I thought, you know, was one of the most painful experiences I've had as a New England sports fan, watching Tom Brady go out there and have a record-setting performance and still lose the game. They ripped it out of his hands. They gave him one last year. They got it back. So to me, it's almost like last year, not to say makes up for 2 years ago, but it makes it a lot easier as a fan. So entering this week, I haven't really thought too much about the Super Bowl rematch. Okay. You said that that's more of, you know, the angle that you find interesting with this game. I hadn't really thought about it, frankly, until you brought it up. So thanks for bringing me down, Chris Casper.
That's what I do.
I really, really appreciate that. You see, I thought I was going to be, you know, the negative Nancy on this program. That's generally what I do. I had no idea that was going to be your role.
Well, you know, I Jim's not here, so I knew I had to step up. I had to turn it up. Next man up. So it's next man up with the negativity. But I honestly feel that way, and I felt that way about that Super Bowl. And it's sort of the same thing. It's an argument I'll probably never win because – not to circle back to this one, but it's the same thing with the 2007 undefeated thing. I think for people, it's really hard to strip the emotion away from it. And when you strip the emotion of losing the perfect season away and just look at the way the team played and the game, they didn't play well in either Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. But the reality is the Giants were a team that had already proven they could give you a game and they won on a super fluky play. The Eagles, I look at that Eagles team, you should have beaten them. You know, Jim Schwartz's defensive game plan was horrible. You basically were scoring at will as long as you didn't have self-inflicted wounds. You just needed one stop, and you couldn't get it with the greatest defensive mind in the history of the game as your head coach, who didn't, you know, whatever with Butler. I mean, I understand him not starting. He hadn't played well in the playoffs. But isn't there a certain point where it's just kind of like it's like Super Bowl 49 when Butler played in the first place. You're looking out there. Kyle Arrington is getting dominated by Chris Matthews. You're like, we have to do something. Let's throw this Butler guy in. It's the same thing. It's like, we can't stop a nosebleed. Let's do something. Whatever. Let's just throw Malcolm in and see if something happens.
Johnson Badamosi.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Johnson Badamosi. And I know we did 6 months on this last year. So every argument and every discussion point, you know, that has been made at this
point. It has, yeah.
Johnson Badamosi. I mean, that's something that sticks with Bill forever. And again, bouncing back last year and holding the Rams to 3 points, it's one of Bill's crowning achievements as a Patriots head coach, but it came after the year that he put Johnson Badamosi deliberately, willfully, consciously, and deliberately put Johnson Badamosi on the field instead of Malcolm Butler. To the day I die, Chris, I will never understand that.
I'll tell you what, if you want to get Jim Murray mad, for those of you that see Jim Murray around, you know, in Philadelphia, you want to get him mad? Mention Johnson Badamosi trying to tackle Nelson Aguilar.
God.
Jim's blood will boil.
By the way, so I'm probably going to be meeting up with Jim.
Very cool.
Think he's going to be wearing Patriots gear? Like, do you think I have to worry about my safety associating myself with Jim Murray tomorrow? Do you think he's going to wear Patriots gear? Because I sure as hell am not wearing Patriots gear in that stadium tomorrow. In fact, I might even wear a Phillies hat, just for the hell of it, to blend in with those animals.
That's pretty
down
smart
there.
For guys like you and me, McCarthy. I think that's, you know, a lot. You know, there's different animals survive
right.
different ways.
I would not survive.
I think for us, you know, camouflage is very important. I think we're like animals that survive, you know, via camouflage, not necessarily, you know, sort of being predators. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good idea on your part. I think you want to camouflage yourself and just blend in. Blend into your surroundings, McCarthy.
I'm way down on the food chain. Like, Jim Murray could be the apex predator. Like, if they tried to go after Jim, I think he could hold his own.
I don't know. There was a time in Chicago he had to beat feet pretty quickly out of a Bears game. You know, he looked around, realized he was outnumbered. Yeah, not a good look.
I'm telling you, you wouldn't catch me dead. I would sooner go into that stadium naked tomorrow than wearing any Patriots gear. I will not be wearing Patriots gear for my own safety, and I will have a great time.
You got to wear it underneath.
I will thoroughly enjoy it.
That's like when I went to Yankee Stadium, you know? Like, I had, like, a button-down shirt on, but underneath was a Red Sox shirt. And whenever they did anything, I just unbutton a few buttons and, you know, Superman flash it, and then, you know, button it back up.
Call me a pansy all you want. I'm just going to call myself smart because I'm going to get out of there alive tomorrow. 617-779-0985. Real quick, let's go to Kenny G in Atlanta. What's up?
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? How y'all doing today?
Hey, Kenny.
Good.
What's
up, Kenny?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, you know, I love y'all down here. I'm down in Atlanta. I love y'all. Always will be home. Here's my real question to you. I believe this. If we would have won that Super Bowl in Philadelphia, I don't think we would have won the next one. Like, I don't think we would have went back to back. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Kenny, it's an interesting point.
I hadn't thought of it that way, to be honest. I don't know, Kenny. I mean, I kind of disagree only from the standpoint of, like, do you think there was some great motivation from losing that Super Bowl that carried into the regular season? Because it didn't look like it. They lost back-to-back
right.
games twice in the same season, and they lost at least five games for the first time since 2009. So it didn't really seem to carry over. I think what's interesting about last year's Patriots team is that they were sort of the type of team that a lot of other teams are when they win the Super Bowl, which is they weren't the best team all year. They just played their best at the right time.
There was a redemption factor, though, for Bill Belichick in particular, and for that Patriots defense and Devin McCourty, and particularly that secondary and safety group. There was a redemption factor with Super Bowl 53. Whether it's a direct correlation, I don't think there's a direct correlation. But from a storyline standpoint, they absolutely redeemed themselves in Super Bowl 53 for Super Bowl 52.
Yeah, but they almost didn't get there.
That's the thing.
That's the point. Right. Like they. I mean,
there's no direct correlation.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a nice little bow tie.
Yeah,
it's a nice little story at the end.
They play great. I mean, they play great, and obviously it's carried over to this year. You know, they played great outside of the Baltimore game, and you know what they were doing defensively in terms of scoring as many touchdowns themselves as they'd had allowed to opposing offenses, that's incredible. It's just not sustainable. I mean, I think they're the best defense in the NFL. I feel that way, honestly. But I think that some of the numbers they put up in the first eight games, to expect them to sustain that is not realistic.
All right, so can the Eagles expose the Patriots somewhat on defense? I don't think that, you know, it's going to be Baltimore 2.0, but is there now a roadmap for teams out there, and do the Eagles have the personnel and the talent and the ability to do that? Let's hit on that on the other side. 617-779-0985. It's Matt McCarthy in for Big Jim Murray on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
It is a Murray-less Gasper and Murray. It's Matt McCarthy in for Big Jim today. Chris Gasper is alongside Sean Silver as well. 617-779-0985. Patriots-Eagles tomorrow in Philadelphia. Let me ask you this, Chris. The defense, were they exposed 2 weeks ago against Baltimore? Yes or no?
Yes.
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 The question is there a team out there that can replicate what Baltimore did? And I think the answer to that might be no, but sort of. So look at the Eagles tomorrow, and we spent a lot of time talking about the rematch factor and, you know, maybe a redemption story, a redemption opportunity for Devin McCourty and company after, you know, the awful performance the defense had 2 years ago. But I look at this Eagles offense, and I feel like they do in some ways have the tools to maybe put some points up on the Patriots. And here's why. Wide receiver, not exactly a strength of the Eagles right now, particularly with Alshon Jeffrey out. But that offense kind of runs through the tight ends and runs through the running backs. I don't know if the Patriots have proven yet this year if they can stop an offense that is tight end and running back based, kind of like Baltimore. And again, that's a totally different beast.
Because of Lamar Jackson.
Because of Lamar Jackson. 100%. And Carson Wentz is mobile, but not that mobile. But I think this Eagles offense has the opportunity to maybe expose the Patriots defense just a little bit again tomorrow. Because I don't know if these linebackers can cover, you know, running backs out of the backfield. Miles Sanders has been, you know, pretty dynamic for them as a pass-catching back. They've got two tight ends. Ertz killed them in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Killed them. So let's see. I think this is a big test for the Patriots defense tomorrow. You know, not only with the bounce back factor, you know, given what happened in Baltimore 2 weeks ago, but I think the Eagles offense does have some pieces that could give the Patriots trouble tomorrow.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, the issue for the Eagles, I think, is that their health is not
right.
You know, good at this point in the year. It's just not. I mean, no Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson is out, so there are questions at wide receiver. So who is Carson Wentz going to be throwing the football to outside of those tight ends and Miles Sanders, who's, you know, third in the league among running backs and average yards per touch, you know, yards from scrimmage. So that's sort of the factor for me. When I think about this game, and I'm going to tie it back to that Super Bowl, the biggest difference in that Super Bowl was the Eagles offensive line dominated.
Sure.
I thought that collectively they should have been the MVP of that game. And so you look at it.
They ran for, what, 9 yards a pop against the Patriots? It was absurd.
And so does that Eagles offensive line, are they able to impose their will the same way? Because if the Patriots defense has a weakness that we've seen thus far, it's that you can run on them. Frank Gore did it. Nick Chubb did it. Mark Ingram, even if you take out Mark Ingram's 53-yard run from that Baltimore game, he still would have averaged 4.4 yards per carry. So it wasn't just that long run. And I think one of Philadelphia's strengths is that offensive line, there's some creativity with Doug Peterson being from the Andy Reid tree in terms of how you run the football. There's creative ways to do it.
RPOs, which RPOs. We know the Patriots have had trouble with in the past. And, you know, of course, going back to the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Some misdirection runs right. And stuff like that. So I think it'll be interesting. I mean, to me, that's where this game is sort of won or lost, is are the Patriots able to contain that Philly offensive line, or does the Philly offensive line own the line of scrimmage? Does that allow the Eagles to run the ball, which then sets up play action, which allows Wentz to get comfortable and make some throws, even though he doesn't have great weapons in the passing game right now because of health?
Yeah, so I think, you know, where the Patriots have struggled defensively this year, and that's obviously a stretch given that they've, you know, for 98% of their games, essentially, or whatever the math is, have been the best defense in the NFL. But we've seen them struggle against, you know, the running game. We saw them struggle against tight ends last week. It's kind of what the Eagles do well offensively. So I think this is a really nice test. If the Patriots go out there and have a strong defensive performance on Sunday, I'm willing to basically say, you know what, that Baltimore game was kind of a fluke.
But, you know, here's the thing with the running game, and I agree with you on that, Matt, but they're allowing 4.7 yards per carry.
Yeah.
Like, that's not great. And also, it's not just that. What's uncharacteristic for the Patriots from a run defense standpoint, they're allowing guys to rip off some long runs. Now, some of them don't hurt. You know, Jonathan Jones makes a great play and chases down Nick Chubb. That ends up not hurting you. It ends up helping you. But they've allowed four runs this year of 40-plus yards. That's tied for the most in the league with Carolina and Jacksonville. So I do think there's, as well as this defense has played, I think they have to put their foot down a little bit in the running game on Sunday.
Yeah, they need to improve in the trenches. And I'm not saying they can't by January, but that's the key for this team. They have to improve in the trenches. 617-779-0985. We've got the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up next. But real quick, Mike and Woburn, you wanted to hit on our last discussion about worst Patriots losses. What's up, Mike?
Hey, you know, I know we're playing the Eagles. I know everybody wants to talk about the Eagles one. But for me, you made the Super Bowl. It didn't work out for you in the Super Bowl. Same with the Giants one. Mitigating factors. Brady's in a walking boot in 42. Gronk's basically the walking wounded in 49. For me, it's 06. It will always be 06. It will always be losing to that Colts team and Bill Polian and Peyton Manning and Bob Sanders, who couldn't stay healthy his entire career except that one playoff run where he became a human supernova. I wonder if he got into Mrs. Manning's medicine cabinet that offseason. But everything went wrong that game. And it wasn't like the Patriots, like the things that conspired against the Patriots in that game were like maddening. That will always be the single
most aggravating loss in this team's history because Rex Grossman was waiting for you in the Super Bowl.
That's true. But the reality, Mike, is you shouldn't have gotten out of San Diego. You had no business winning that game. You didn't deserve to win that. The Chargers completely handed you that game.
21-6. 21-6 at the half. Rashe Caldwell. Eric Alexander. Why am I doing this to myself?
But that's why you didn't win. Because you had Eric. You know, you had those guys. I mean, I hear what he's saying. I covered that game. I know we got to go to Sports Hub Celtics show. Frustrating loss. But the reality is, like, that team, not that good.
617-779-0985. But to your point, they left one on the table, Chris. They left one on the table. They never should have lost that game. Sure, they got there. But, hey, you know what? They got there. And they never, ever should have lost that. That's enough. We're not doing any more of that.
Okay.
I can't take this for my psyche. All right, please. No more. I don't know why we went down this rabbit hole in the first place.
It's a good topic. We have to save this as a rainy day topic.
Oh, my God. Don't do this to me, Chris. See, I thought I was going to enjoy working with you.
When are you in next on Hub Headlines for Gasper and Murray? Because I'm going to make sure this is the topic.
You know, you're just going to start texting me, like, in the middle of the night. AFC Championship game, 2006. You son of a...
Denver, 2005.
Oh, my God. Here's Sean Silver with the Sports Hub Headlines, and we got the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.